Welcome to Panel to the People. We are broadcasting today from the Music Centre in Churchill College. Panel to the People is the improvised panel show that puts the power in your hands, the people. Every single part of this show is improvised, and that includes, people, the title of the show. So, I'd like some suggestions from the audience. Could I have a noun that is bigger than a watermelon?
A cow.
A cow. Excellent. And can I have a second noun that is smaller than a stoat?
A biscuit.
A biscuit. Excellent. A cow and a biscuit. Finally, from the audience, I would like a verb which could relate a cow and a biscuit that is not eating.
Stomping.
Excellent. The title of the show for today is Cows Stomping Biscuits. So, hello and welcome to Cows Stomping Biscuits. We have four wonderful improvised comedians for you today, so introducing our panel, we have Rich Wareham, Chris Smoten, Michael Quintero, and CJ Donnelly. We're going to start by playing song lyrics. In this game, I will give a line from a song, and then I'll ask for panellists to come up with ideas for what the next line of the song will be. So, starting out, breathe in the air.
Breathe in the air. I can see the head starting to crown.
Okay, moving on. Them and us.
Them and us must learn some good grammar.
Ticking away the moments that make up a dull day.
Revealing the shinier day beneath.
Don't stop believing.
Instead, just make it up.
Because a fairy dies.
Maybe this makes you sick.
When you eat a cow instead of a biscuit.
Maybe this makes you sick. You're allergic to pronouns.
The president is on the line.
Get off the toilet.
The president is on the line, which explains the terrible reception. Get down, George, get down!
The president is on the line and we need to find a new place to fish.
You can check out any time you like.
But we will charge you if it's after 10 a.m.
You can check out any time, but be aware it will say unexpected item in the baggage area.
You can check out any time you like. But some personifications of time take that back and, like, might get quite arsy about it.
You can check out any time you like here in this metaphysical library.
Mm. You can check out any time you like, but not anything you like. Mm-mm.
Okay, and that was song lyrics. We're going to be topical now without referring to politics or football. We're going to tell the news. So, in this game, each of the panellists is going to tell a news story, but they are going to speak one word at a time going around the panel. I would like from the audience a suggestion for a typical headline that you might see in a tabloid newspaper.
Cow stomped biscuits, immigrants blamed.
Cow stomped biscuits, immigrants blamed. Michael, take it away.
Today,
in
Norwich,
cows attacked.
A
small,
innocent,
oatmeal
wafer.
Police
suspected
that
gypsies
and
Frenchmen
brought
terror
to
Norfolk, then Norwich,
by
encouraging
all
resident
cows
to
start
revolting.
The
owner
of
the
biscuit
spoke
thusly.
I was
walking
along
the park,
walking
with
my biscuit,
and
all
of
it
happened
in
seconds.
A
giant
Frenchman
burst
out
of
my
suitcase
and
spake
thusly.
Je.
Voudrais.
Trompe.
Votre.
Biscuit. The
suitcase
was
smuggled
in
my
baggage.
France.
The
outcome
was
a
complete
disaster
as
a
cow
eventually
stomped
on my
biscuit.
I am going to get you for that.
Points go to Chris Merton for forcing Michael Quinteria to continue in French. Okay, we're going to do some sound effects. In this game, Rich and Chris are going to tell a story, and at various points in the story, CJ and Michael are going to make it more interesting by providing the backing track for it, for sound effects. And from the audience, I would like a noun about the size of a watermelon. A bomb. Excellent, a bomb. And a non-geographical location.
A bus.
Could you tell a story about a bus and a bomb? Actually, that's quite easy. Let's take something that's completely unrelated to the plot of that film. Can we have another noun to include? This time, about the size of a pencil.
A ruler.
A ruler. You also have to include a ruler.
A bomb, a bus, and a ruler.
And take it away.
My first day at school was a strange affair, it must be said. I remember the beginning of the day quite well. My mother tearfully sending me off.
Goodbye!
I stepped onto the bus. And as it was the first day, as we did in those days, we were escorted by the monarch of the day, King George the VI.
King George the VI preferred to sit in the back of the bus, it turned out. And I, wanting to be one of the naughty kids, decided to go and join him. Well, King George the VI soon took an interest in my pencil case and was astonished by the noise of what I took out. Shing!
It was my all-in-one katana and ruler. Yes, said I. It's very naughty of me, I know, but I love both Japanese warfare and measurement. As it turned out, the king shared my passion.
Getting to school, the king and I decided that we would get to step off the bus together and I would smuggle him into the school incognito. Luckily, I had a spare school uniform in case of accidents. Putting the cap on the school cap on the king, he adopted the typical voice of a schoolboy.
Hello. Cor blimey, I've had an accident.
I rapped the king sternly on the head and ordered him to adopt a more convincing persona. The king complied.
Bonjour. Je voudrais commencer à l'école.
Yes, indeed, our first lesson that day was French. Sitting at the back of the class, our French teacher suspected nothing. It was, after all, our first day. Who was she to know if the large, crowned person at the back was a new school starter or not? I took my katana cum ruler out and, at a bored moment during the class, started to twang it on the side of the desk.
My teacher seized the katana from my hands for its truly indecent mechanical properties.
There's blood everywhere!
Dropping it, the King George the VI dived to rescue my sword, while I also dived to try and get out of the way of it. Due to a bizarre, complicated state of affairs, I ended up being knighted.
The king couldn't remember the words for the ceremony, but it worked anyway, and I was made a knight.
Then there was a small incident. For you see, in my pencil case, not only do I have my love of Japanese warfare, but also my love of Western warfare manifest itself in a bomb.
The teacher's disappointment was palpable. Defuse that bomb at once, said the teacher. But alas, I had forgotten the code required to defuse the bomb.
So, there I was, my first day at school, with King George VI rapidly trying to state every possible code word in the world in order to try and defuse the bomb.
Ah, aardvark, aardwolf, abacus, abracadabra, Zaire.
Luckily, the bomb being a French design didn't work.
Points there go to Michael for his amazing pronunciation of doing. Okay, we're going to play X Without Y. This is a game where I invite the panellists to tell a famous story, but we're going to remove a crucial element from it. For example, we could tell Harry Potter, but without magic. Or we could tell Pirates of the Caribbean without pirates, and so on and so forth. So I would like from the audience a famous story.
The Sound of Music.
Something to remove from The Sound of Music.
Music.
Michael and CJ, please tell the story of The Sound of Music without music.
Maria liked wandering through the hills in silence.
The nuns looked on disapprovingly in silence.
Eventually she went off and decided to look after a family and look after all the kids. And she didn't teach them anything.
She met the kids by the father of the family, summoning them by raising a whistle to his lips and then doing nothing.
They later entered a competition as a family to be silent.
Then, with the Nazis quietly on their trail, they started up the very arrhythmic and atonal car. Driving to the convent.
The Nazis chase into the convent, but when the Nazis question the nuns, no, they didn't sing about the whereabouts of the family. They kept quiet.
The walls of the convent were sort of an off-white colour that was quite boring to look at. A dull vice, if you will. But no one said this, because it was the name of the forbidden things.
And then the family escaped into a joyless life.
They died recently.
The end.
Yes. Now, in the vein of continuing with experiments, we're going to have something called the mystery round. Ooh. That was the reaction I was hoping for.
If not Mrs. one that was deserved.
This is a new invention to panel with people, and we've not done it before. It's experimental, so it could go horribly wrong. The idea is that I have invented a new panel game, which none of the panelists have ever played before, and they don't know the rules. I will explain the rules and then ask them to play it. They've never practiced it, so it's double the improvisation. And today, their mystery round game is called Dragon's Lair. It's not at all a rip-off from a very famous business-themed show. So, I would like Michael and CJ to try and sell a product, pitch the idea of a product to some wealthy businessmen who are going to decide whether or not they want to invest in it. They're going to describe, you know, the properties of this product and why it's such a good idea, and then Rich and Chris are going to decide whether they want to invest in it by asking them some interesting questions about it. From the audience, I would like an everyday noun, say a noun you'd find in the kitchen.
A wooden spoon.
And could I have a property this wooden spoon would have that makes it unique and unusual?
Plastic.
I'm going to take that. So you're going to have to sell a wooden spoon that's made of plastic. For Rich and Chris, I would like somebody else to come up with a property the spoon has that makes it a completely terrible idea.
It's made of plastic.
Something else.
It insults your cookery.
Is that insults or assaults? Both. Okay, so that's what you have to get into this. Michael and CJ, take it away.
So we've developed this new product. It is revolutionary because it combines two separate material properties.
So, you know when you're in the kitchen and there's something right at the back of the oven that you want to scrape out, but the shape of your oven is such that there's a corner where there wasn't one previously, and your utensil is straight, and you need to change its shape as well, this is the product for you.
Yes. So, well, normally in that situation, you'd use a wooden spoon, but of course you can't change the shape of that. But we've managed to create one which has all the properties of a wooden spoon, but is plastic.
So is it made of wood at one time and plastic another? Or is it made of both at the same time, kind of like quantum?
So it depends what you want at the specific time. I mean, if you pick it up and you want a plastic spoon, it'll be plastic. But if you pick it up and you want a wooden spoon, it'll be wooden.
So what happens if you're a cook who is plagued by self-doubt?
Well, then I suppose that the spoon might just dissolve.
But cooks are generally quite definite in what they want, so we don't think this is a flaw.
I've got a question. Why does it have "that lasagna is rubbish" written on the back of it?
This is just a prototype. If you just look at the other side...
It says... that pasta bake is rubbish.
So we found that
In fact, all the way across it, it's just insults about all possible foodstuffs, which is quite impressive given the space.
You've used me that new polymer, haven't you? Polyinsult arsenic.
We did try and make underwear out of it, but that went horribly wrong.
but we've also added something to it, so it's also
right.
Wood.
Wood. Like, we added wood to it.
So it deforms only when you want it to.
So, basically, the only property you've added to this is it catches fire.
Well...
It only catches fire if when it's in the flames, you think you want it to be wooden, which is a stupid thing to do. And we should set it to insult that rather than the cooking.
Although, I mean, when it's insulting your cooking and then you put it near some fire, it is quite hard not to make it want to burst into flames.
Yeah. But no, we...
No,
we
I like won't. That, I like that, because then people have to buy another one. It's got, like, an inbuilt sort of lifetime. I like that. That's good. I like
so,
that.
we were thinking we'd like 50,000 pounds for 10% of the company.
I'll give you 27p. For 84% of the company.
We have intelligent spoons here. I mean, they really criticise your cooking in a cutting way. It's not just "that's bad." You sort of read it and you feel bad for a week.
I will invest in this if it identifies subconscious desires, because I want a spoon which you hand to somebody, and if it turns out they really fancy the cook, then, well...
Why is that just turned into a small wooden model of me, Chris? Is there some sort of tension I should know about here?
I have nothing to hide.
I'm aware of that.
This is where you say, "I'm out."
I'm definitely out.
Rich and Chris, I would like you to step outside briefly. We're going to play a game of charades. And Rich and Chris will be guessing the charade, which is why I've asked them to leave. This is a special version of charades. You're aware that charades is a mind game, and we're on the radio. So we have made a version of charades that works on the radio. It's called blind charades. What's going to happen is Michael is going to perform the mime, and as he performs it, Rich and Chris will not be able to see him at all. CJ will describe what he's doing, so that they can try and guess the mime. From the audience, I'd like something that would be a valid topic for charades.
Fireman Sam.
Fireman Sam. Excellent. Okay,
nothing.
Take it away.
He's doing nothing. Okay, he's put his two index fingers together and drawn a box in the air in front of him.
That would probably be a square.
A square.
or possibly a TV programme.
He's making the peace sign with his right hand.
Two words.
He's holding up his index finger.
First word.
He's put his two index fingers in the rude sign. yes, that's it. Thank you.
Winston Churchill.
And
the book, the TV program.
And put his left arm out and placed the rude sign on the meaty part of his left arm.
Two syllables.
He is now pointing at the meaty part of his left arm.
First syllable.
He has both of his hands and he is flapping at his face. Now he has run slightly to the left and is flapping at his foot.
Fire?
He is pointing at the back of your head and grinning like a maniac.
So fire, fire, fire.
He is almost making the Cub Scout signal on the meaty part of his left hand.
Do you want to take this one, Chris?
Third syllable.
third syllable of two.
Almost making this. I'm practically certain of it.
Almost making that cup scouting.
Oh. He's making two thirds of it, probably. second syllable.
He is staring into the distance in a way that kind of embodies his sense of self.
So the second syllable is introspect.
Fire introspect something.
He has made a kind of David Copperfield, the magician type signal, where he has both of his hands to his face. He draws them down through his body and then gestures out the side like a magician.
Fire face, fire body.
He is waving his hands up and down in front of his lower torso. And now his toes.
Fire bowels.
Fire breath. Fire booyakasha.
He is staring angrily into the distance in a way that typifies his sense of self.
Fire hurt.
Is it Fireman by any chance?
Fireman. Fire, that works. Yeah.
To phrase this another way, have we milked this for long enough?
He is mugging and making the peace sign.
So second word, right, is it Fireman Dave?
He's tugging the lobe of his right earlobe and then jousting without a horse.
Sounds like stab.
He's shaking his head.
Sounds like...
His lance is, 6 inches wide.
That is a tree trunk. He is jousting. I question his jousting technique. What is he riding to be able to carry such a generously proportioned lance?
He's just looking at me.
Fireman longing? I don't know.
Could it be... Fireman Sam.
I have no idea what that mine was supposed to be.
It was a battering ram.
A ram!
That went well. Points go to Michael for being the only one who understood what his own mime meant. We're going to play Oxford English Pictionary. In this game, I have gone and found some very obscure, or hopefully obscure, words that our panellists have never seen before, and I'm going to ask them to talk about them and trying to find what they mean. Here we go.
A snanny is a supersymmetric particle of a nanny.
See, we also have snadger, which I think is a sort of...
It's like a nadger, but more massive.
I was going to say it's the outcome of a genetic experiment between a badger and a peanut-based snack.
I think tumshy is somebody who really doesn't want to be eaten.
Yummy is what you say when confronted with yourself in a mirror.
That is the last of the words, so I will reveal that all of these words mean turnip.
So does that mean that now I can go back home and when I'm cooking I can say, does anybody want mashed snatchers? It's going to be good.
We're going to play Job of a Lifetime. Job of a Lifetime is a game where Michael and CJ are going to interview Rich and Chris for some kind of job. I would like in the audience a job that there could only be one of. It doesn't have to be a real job, but there can only be one of them.
Taxi driver.
As you know, there's only one taxi driver.
That's why it's so hard to get them.
Okay, I would like you to interview Rich and Chris for the job of the only taxi driver in London. He has to be all of the taxi drivers all at once.
Hello.
Now.
Do
you
know
how
to
bifurcate
your
self?
Firstly,
my...
dear.
My.
Love.
My.
Everything.
Get.
Out.
Hang.
On.
That.
Was.
Just.
Me.
Introducing.
My.
Self.
Vainly.
Now.
The.
Process.
Of.
Bifurcation.
Of.
The.
self
is
as
follows.
Take
one
knife.
Insert
thusly
into
my
gizzard
and
twist
like
so.
Good.
I
see
you
have
mastered
the
technique
of
bifurcation. Do
you
think
you
could
convey
people
across
this
city?
Yes.
Can
you
drive
a
motor car
or
a
bus
or
a
cable car
or
a
helicopter
or
a
steamship?
I
think
I
could
if
only
I
were
to
think
of
a
mechanism
by
which
I
might
control
such
a
vehicle
many
years
ahead
of
when
I
need
to.
You
know
the
secret
of
conveyances
in
London.
It's
elementary.
I
simply
take
my
knife.
Insert
into
my
pedestrian
and
force
them
to
convey.
I
don't
think
forcing
them
to
convey
is
really
taxi
protocol.
I've
been
around
London
hundreds
of
years
and
never
once
found
that
a
pedestrian
disagreed
with
my
persuasion.
How
would
you
choose
your
knife?
It
must
be
long
and
bendy.
Why
bendy?
So
I
can
skewer
people
from
any
angle.
One
more
question.
What
would
you
do
if
someone
rejected
your
job?
I
would
kill
them
with
my
knife.
Congratulations!
You
got the job!
This game, Rich is going to give a speech to a group of people, like at a conference. It's going to be about something completely unrelated to what they are. And at various points during his speech, Chris is going to jump in and say change, at which point he must immediately retract what he said and say something different instead. I would like a profession from the audience.
Zookeeper.
A zookeeper. And could I have anything which is unrelated to zoos completely?
Powdered milk.
Rich, please give a speech to a group of zookeepers about powdered milk.
My fellow zookeepers, welcome here today. I hope that your animals will survive a day without your care.
Change.
I hope that the animals will survive the good long week of this conference without your care.
Change.
I hope your animals are being looked after by someone else. I really do, because this is going to go on for a year. Now, I'm going to talk to you today about the scourge of our profession, which, as you know, is inconsistent feeding of animals.
Change.
Which, as you know, is the terrible plight of the Chinese panda.
Change.
Which, as you know, are visitors. Now, zoos would be wonderful places if it weren't for the two things of visitors and animals, but I'm afraid that we can't get rid of them that easily.
Change.
I'm afraid there's an easy way to get rid of those visitors.
Change.
Now, there's a bit of a complicated way to get rid of the visitors, but hear me out. Now, it involves a rather common foodstuff. It involves powdered milk. Now, you're asking me, I've no idea how we can get rid of visitors from a zoo with powdered milk.
Change.
Now you're saying, I know exactly what you're going to say. You're going to say, that'll only get rid of the vegans. But I'm going to tell you now, that you can make powdered milk the most morally corrupt substance on the world. And then if you sprinkle powdered milk around your zoo, no one will want to come in. If you spread powdered milk across the zoo, if you mix the powdered milk with water and then replace it with the actual milk of the animals, then the corruption will spread. Then the corruption will be corralled into the babies. And thus you'll end up with the most corrupt animal babies in the world. The best way to corrupt powdered milk is to try and put something in it which everyone hates, or to put something, lots of things in it, of which the union is something that everyone hates. Like, to put something in it which only four people hate, but those four people are very influential. And that thing is the abolition of the monarchy. That thing is the removal of the top four people in government.
Change.
That thing is the University of Cambridge.
Change.
That thing is the University of Oxford.
Change.
That thing is France.
Change.
That thing is my knee. That thing is Chris's knee. Now, Chris, as we know, has been declared illegal in four of the main European states. Chris, as you know, has been declared king of most of the European states. And as such, our monarchy does not approve of Chris. So, if we can grind Chris up...
Change!
If we can somehow extract the essence of Chris in a non-painful way and mix it with the powdered milk, then our very own monarchy will object to it. And they will therefore have a ripple effect through the hierarchy of society, so it becomes morally questionable. So I've already got a small essence of Chris here, which I extracted earlier.
Change.
Which I extracted just in front of your very eyes. He was very quiet about it, I must admit. And I'm going to mix it with this powdered milk, and now I'm going to feed it to this adorable little koala. And then I'm going to place her in the centre of the zoo and encourage all other animals to suckle from her.
Change.
I'm going to encourage all animals to take her very essence and ingest it into their milk.
Change.
I'm going to encourage all animals to do likewise.
Good enough.
And that, my friends, is a foolproof way to remove all visitors from zoos.
Points in that round go to the essence of Chris. We're going to play a game called Who's Lying? Earlier, before the show, we asked the audience to write down some lines of dialogue they'd like to see in a scene. I have got these lines of dialogue on small quote cards, and I've given three each of these cards to Michael and CJ. They are going to act out a scene, and at various points in the scene, they will turn over one of the cards, having never seen it before, and immediately use the line of dialogue provided. From the audience, to get them going, I'd like a non-geographical, mundane location.
A lift.
A lift, an elevator. Take it away.
Are you M. Night Shyamalan?
No. And I am insulted that you would say that. Why would you say such a thing to me?
I've just come from the cinema and there's that horrible film by M. Night Shyamalan on about a lift. The tagline was, it's the result of sorcery!
No!
God damn him!
No, this lift is entirely canny. It is entirely natural. And do you know what they said when they created this marvel? This calls for defenestration!
Yeah! And why is the lift headed out of the window?
It's okay, it just makes you think that it's gonna tip you out the window. It's like a horror!
So it's like a horror lift, so I wasn't that far off.
No, but if I had actually said that it was a horror lift, you wouldn't.
Oh, know. I see. I'd be prepared. You know, I'd be thinking, I cannot tell a lie, I did cut down that cherry tree. Because George Washington was never frightened. You could stab him in the face and he'd be like, fine.
So, what brings you to the elevator industry today?
Well, I was thinking of buying some elevators for my complex of buildings.
That's great! And that's why you shouldn't dry your clothes in the microwave the next time!
Right.
Use one of our special drying lists that goes right out the window! You can dry your clothes in there! Excellent choice, sir.
So, I have one final question about all of these lifts before I commit. Oh, God. Beth, It's the dragon. Quick, fetch the hammer. Sorry, flashing back to that terrible film I just watched. How much would they cost? Fetch the hammer.
That's slightly disturbing.
Fetch the hammer.
There is one surefire way to help you. What we need, Harry, is a dragon. That therapy will cure you. And then you can buy our lifts.
It's true.
Points go to the member of the audience who drew a dragon on their line of dialogue.
Was it Trogdor?
No,
it's not a Trogdor. It's a normal dragon.
It was a proper
dragon. It's had a little beefy arm on the back of its neck, though.
Beefy arms are cool.
While CJ does that, I'm going to pick up the other index cards that we passed out before the show, upon which I asked the audience to write down some questions.
Look at all its majesty.
Which we are now going to use in a quick fire round. So, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready? Michael, if you could invent a mythological creature, what would it be?
It would have the knee of Chris and the body of a lion.
Okay. Yes, I'll take that. CJ, are you coming back?
No.
Pity. Rich, if monkeys could talk, what would they say?
Get off me.
Chris, what's your best dance move?
The baleful stare of death.
Yes, okay, I'll take that. CJ, what's the favourite pet of Queen Victoria?
I think it was her empire.
No, it's Camilla Parker Bowles. Rich, how would the UK look like if it was in the Mediterranean?
It would look exactly the same, but 40% more lazy.
Chris, knock knock, who's there?
I don't know.
Do I now have to invent a question?
I need more information. Ask me the next question, which must be the third line of a knock knock.
Very well. If a white star collides with a red star, what colour do you end up with?
Oh, Daz.
CJ, does the world care?
The world is not alive.
Yes, but if you love, are you a dove?
Not if you're the world.
Chris, have you ever known a melon?
I do not like your tone.
No points for you. And finally, CJ, why did the milk go sour?
It wasn't powdered.
Okay. Adding up the points from that, I see that Rich is today's winner.
Right.
And as the prize for winning the show, Rich is going to lead the people of the audience in glorious battle against our foes.
Oh, God.
Rich is going to give a rousing speech to lift your spirits and send you on your way from this show, as if he was on the eve of battle. I would like from the audience some suggestions to include in his speech. So first of all, some enemies that you are fighting against.
Dragons.
I would also like a famous monument somewhere in the world that they are battling over.
The Eiffel Tower.
And finally, I would like a secret weapon that you believe the dragons have.
Freeze rays. Nappies.
Nappies. Okay. Before Rich gives his speech, I'd like one last time for you to thank our panellists, Michael Conterio, CJ Donnelly, Chris Smoten, and our winner and glorious general today, Rich Wareham. Take it away.
My fellow Englishmen, hello and welcome to the battle. I shall be your general today. Now, as I'm sure you're all aware, we have a little contretemps at the moment with the Welsh. Now, no true Englishman has ever seen a Welshman, so we've had to go by their flag as a guide to what they look like. Now, I know you're all pretty scared by what you've seen there, but let me tell you now, they may look scary, but those dragons are actually only 4 inches tall. There's no scale on that flag, you see. Now, since generally we English people are a fair old chap, We thought we'd do the battle on some neutral territory, which is why we're here in Paris. Now, I hope everyone has got their requisite sort of French fighting equipment. Yes, I can see a good raft of baguettes in the corner there. Yes, you've all got your berets on. Jolly good. Now, that's the element of disguise, you see. That's our secret weapon. They're not going to know that we're the English until we beat them. Now, there's been some rumours going around that these foul Welsh people have got a secret weapon. Yes, I know you know what it is. You think it's nappies. Yes, yes. That may give them a small advantage. They may be able to stay on the battlefield longer. They may not need to excuse themselves. But we have got a far greater power. We're English. We have lager. We can get so drunk we don't care where we pee. And it's France. We definitely don't care where we pee. So, my English brethren, I want you all to be disguised as Frenchmen, climb to the very top of the Eiffel Tower, and pee on the Welsh for all it's worth. Go forward, England.
That was Panels of the People. The panellists were Chris Slowton, Rich Whalen, CJ Connolly, and Michael Contarian. The host was David Birch. The host's script was written by David Birch, and the rest of the panellists had no script.
Sheep.